You know, you got to have a yin and a yang, just like a good marriage or relationship or activity.
Yep. Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace, where we discuss real-time workplace issues with experts to get you the best solutions for your company. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, longtime professional recruiter, coach, and creator of the Chief of Staff Scaffold System. Let's get into it. So I get a lot of questions from founders about hiring due to the 3 decades that I have behind me as a professional headhunter. And, you know, they ask questions like, when do I hire? How to hire the right people? Who's my next hire, et cetera. So this is an area I am, needless to say, super passionate about. So I hope that this helps many of you out there at this stage of building your team or rebuilding your team. And today I have with me CEO and founder of Aproio, Chris Carter, who also has a lot of experience and opinions on this matter. So Chris, first let's start and tell us a little bit about Aproio.
Oh, let's see. So where do I start? So I came out of retirement and in 2011, I started the company and it deals with SAP. It literally helps with cloud. It helps with the SAP implementations, the migrations, the upgrades, the management, the licenses, and the organization. I started it. I was very fortunate to become an SAP Startup Focus Program partner, and it's wonderful.
So you're an SAP partner. How did the idea come to you to, you know, be like an SAP implementation expert?
Yeah, that's a great question because I sure didn't want to be in the beginning.
Well, it's not like you worked for SAP like a million years ago, but
I did.
Yeah.
And I was working on those activities when it was the R3 days, from R2 to R3. And then I got out of it. And so it's one of those things where it was, I left and I became just the management of the systems, the organizational change management activities. And then I kind of stepped away after a bit and I took a 2-year hiatus and was working for other people. And then I got pulled back in by the vice president of SAP, who said that they needed somebody to come in and really help them with the SAP HANA and these new upgrades and the new cycles. And so I went off to Waldorf, Germany, and then I went out to Palo Alto, and I interacted with all the executives, and we started talking about it. And so that's where it went to. And I learned really quickly that I loved having vision. And I love to be able to share that vision and put it out there and to be able to help others not only nurture their visions, but also to help organizations who have got a vision of what to do with their SAP, with their landscapes, with their people. And so I started it back up and away we went.
So as you know, as you and I both know, you know, founders make so many mistakes when hiring, especially first-time founders. Right.
Oh, God. Yeah.
What was the biggest mistake you made in terms of that?
Not hiring fast enough of the key positions and having those individuals come on board fast. I used to think that I could do everything, and I started getting worn way too thin. As you can tell, I pulled out all my hair. And if I would have hired my COO faster, my CIO faster, even somebody who ran my sales and marketing, my chief sales officer, if I would have hired those faster, I think that we would have been able to do things in a faster timeline and to be able to move forward faster. And unfortunately, I didn't do that right away. And I think that's one thing. And then the second thing I tell new entrepreneurs or anybody that's starting a business, remember, this too shall pass. You are going to get high highs. You're going to win a deal and you're going to be like, yeah, this is outstanding. And then you're going to lose deals and you're going to be like, oh my God, it's the end of my life. It's the end of the company. It's the end of this. Positives and negatives happen all the time. Just remember, this too shall pass. And those are the two things I go forward with if I would have done.
Chris, what prevented you from making those initial hires faster?
I just didn't think about it fast enough and know about it and make the decision fast enough. I really thought that we were going along in a nice pace and I was taking on those responsibilities. But what I didn't come to realize until after the fact is that I was taking on all of that. And if I would have given up some of those responsibilities to other people, they would have been able to, you know, you got to have a yin and a yang, just like a good marriage or relationship or activity.
Yep.
I am not really good at the back office activities. I hate having to do the billing and take care of the taxes and take care of the HR and all those fun things. But I, as soon as I found somebody who was my COO who could take on all that responsibilities, that was great because then I could go back out there and I could lead, I could have the vision, I could do the sales activities. Same thing with the IT. I'm really good at IT, but I'm not a keyboard warrior. So I needed a CIO who could do those activities as well.
Yeah. Well, and that is, this is so common that, I mean, I see founders all the time and they're like doing 2, 3, 4 different jobs. I'm like, why are you doing that? You realize it's going to stunt your company growth, right?
Yes. And I wish I would have known that in 2011.
Right. Well, but you know, even knowing that doesn't necessarily solve the problem, right? Because what ends up happening is sometimes it's just that the founder's living they're living in scarcity rather than abundance. Yes. Right. So I think, it's going to cost me money and I don't know if I want to hire anyone. Then, you know, my question to them is, why are you an entrepreneur?
Exactly.
Really? I mean, really, it's not everybody likes to hear that, Chris.
No, they don't.
You have no business being a founder if you are unwilling to spend money to help your company grow, period. Now, it doesn't mean you should go crazy, but you have to spend money wisely.
So one Ferrari, not two?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you mentioned yin and yang. How do you apply that to hiring?
Oh, that's a great question. So I'll start how my perfect yin and yang works with my chief operating officer. He takes on the responsibilities of the things that either I don't like or am not good at. I am not good with dealing with the federal government and taxes in multiple states for multiple companies, for multiple countries even. He built Dell's international team and got them, LLC'd or incorporated or whatever the case may be, in Ireland back in the day and all that kind of fun stuff. So he's really good at that stuff. The only thing I knew about was going out and getting my LLC through an attorney who was doing it in Delaware and those activities. So there's perfect activities there. Same thing with hiring these days. We look for people when we hire. We like our people to be leveled up, and especially in today's AI society. If you're just coming out and you just came to me and you just hand me your certificate from the university, well, that's great. But what else did you do? Yeah. Did you do internships? I just spoke to a young man this weekend. He didn't do any internships his entire college career. Okay, well, what experience are you bringing me? And he's made the same reference. He's actually a son of a friend of mine. And his comment was, I made the mistake. And now everybody's asking for experience. I said, okay, well, I did 2 unpaid internships in college. I then did 2 paid internships in college. Right. And then I got a job where I was doing stuff before I became an SAP consultant at went through my internship at Coca-Cola. So that's 4+ right there. That's the experience I automatically had on my resume. And I tell these young people all the time, I either want experience or it's one of those things where you need to come to the table prepped and ready to go and have more details wrapped around it again.
Yeah.
So,
you know, we just talked a little bit about, I brought up kind of out of order, you know, what my comment usually is about if a founder is unwilling to spend money, right? But what would you say to a founder who's listening, who doesn't feel ready or have the funds to hire someone, but knows they need it?
Find those funds. Find them.
Right. That's what
Take
I would say.
Take it out of your paycheck if you can. Yeah. You need those people to take those responsibilities off your plate to free you up. And once you're free, if you're the sales side of the technology and sales, or then you're freed up to be able to do that more. It's amazing. I literally am in my office. I'm at meetings. I'm at speaking engagements, whatever the case may be. I am literally nonstop on that laptop doing my side of the work, knowing full well my mind is clear because I know he's taking care of the other side of the office. And so if you've got to pull a grand out of your paycheck every month just to bring somebody in, do it. It will put your mind at ease, and you will see, you will reap the rewards.
Yeah. And, you know, I will just put a little a point on top of what you're saying, because this is what I talk about a lot as a fractional chief of staff, the importance of CEOs having a chief of staff. And it does the same thing. Different, very distinctly different than a COO, because the kind of things you're describing that your CEO does, I would never even touch. But to be able to free up you to do the things that you should be doing, not the things you shouldn't be doing, right?
Right. Absolutely.
There's a lot. There's a lot. There's a lot in there.
And you make reference to the chief of staff. That's a perfect. I'll make a segue into my my personal assistant.
Yeah.
Once I got a PA and she took on the responsibilities of some of the things that I was doing, man, I laid things out and she just took the ball and ran.
Great.
And things that I was like, oh, I guess I should have been doing X, Y, and Z. Well, you can't keep up with it. And holy cow, it's made a major difference as well.
Good, good, good. Yeah, distinctly different from a chief of staff, but of nevertheless, course. Somebody that is freeing you in other particular ways, right? Which is terrific.
Yes. Yeah.
So walk us through your offer evolution, Chris. Like what, you know, has what you sell and who you sell to changed at all since starting the company? And if so, how?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And the reason how, I'll start with that, is because SAP has evolved. The application has evolved from being an on-site, on-premise, bare metal or VMware-based application to now it's a fully clouded application.
Yeah.
And so what we were selling, where the management and the support and the operations with that, we evolved it into selling the license, selling the cloud, implementing the application or migrating from the bare metal on-premise into the cloud, still managing that activity or a subset of it because some of it is taken on by SAP, and then being able to support them for the long term with that management. So we actually grew more and built out more as a part of that activity.
Interesting. Gotcha. So what would you say is your biggest bottleneck to growth right now, if there is anything?
My bottleneck to growth is right now the SAP ecosystem is on fire.
Really?
And the problem that we have is we get a lot of these offshore companies competing against us. We're trying to find people that have actually done the work or that we can train to do the work that we need. From the implementation or migration standpoint, where we find that our competition will come in with these low ball offers, bring these in. It's kind of grating on my skin right now because there's actually a company that we lost a deal to that literally brought in all this offshore labor. And I've been talking with the CIO back and forth, and he doesn't have, his board made the decision to go with them because of the price point. And literally, they undercut us by probably 50%. And we're a pretty decently priced organization. And he said that they are just having a continuous in the front door, out the back door, in the front. And he doesn't know who's going to be in that office, who's going to be working on the project the next day, who's going to be in there the next week after the weekend. Yeah. And it's just horrible. And it's a whole litany of issues with it. So that's our biggest concern right now is individual organizations from overseas come in with this cheap, low labor, think that they're, and they just oversell and underdeliver.
Yeah. You know, this is, I'm so glad you brought this up. Not that I'm glad you're going through this, but this is really an age old problem that is getting worse, in my opinion.
Yes.
I mean, I am constantly being pitched. You know, people try to connect with me. They don't even send me a message. You know, I look at the name, I look at where they're from, and I just delete it, you know, immediately, right?
The
or
LinkedIn
they're just pitching me.
It's horrible. If you don't have a photo on your LinkedIn, first of all, you're automatically gone.
Yeah, deleted.
If you pitch me some, it's funny, the new pitch, this new AI pitch on LinkedIn now, hey, I hear you're working at Carrick Rangers, which is the soccer team that I bought as a minority owner. I hear you're on the Carrick Rangers. You can do this, this, and this. And I'm like, that has nothing to do with what the Carrick Rangers are. It's a great professional soccer team in Ireland. it doesn't do tech.
Well, like, that's the problem. Yeah, I responded to one like that today, in fact, and said, you know, I appreciate the reach out, but it might behoove you to do a little research about what I do before you send me, you know, AI spam, you know.
Yes.
And 100%. It's making it even harder to get through to people. You know, I mean, I grew up learning what sales really is. And the problem, of course, is that people don't understand what sales is anymore. They think that they can take a shortcut. And an old buddy of mine with, you know, probably more years than I have of sales experience said to me one day, Carol, if sales was easy, they'd give a dog a note. And that's really what AI is, if you think about it. That's the note. Yeah. That's the dog note. And it's not working.
Love it.
Right?
No.
So this is such a huge problem. And, you know, I guess the question is, there's two things. Do we want to work with people that are just going to take the lowest offer? You don't think that's going to cost something? You don't think it's low for a reason?
Oh, exactly.
I mean, I could give you example after example after example of that. And I do have people that work for me overseas. They are not cheap. They may not be as expensive as somebody I'd hire in the United States, but they are not cheap and they are outstanding.
Exactly.
And of course, I have people here in the States working for me as well. There's just a few things that I, you know, that I send away to outside the U.S. But, you know, the other thing I think about when it comes to the bottleneck that you're experiencing is, you know, have you considered, or what is your, I had somebody use this terminology that I love, unique mechanism.
Oh.
Like, what makes you different? I know what makes me different with what I do. And there's two things that make me different than anybody else, whether it's a headhunting firm who's placing chiefs of staff, whether it's somebody that's competing against me directly that nobody else can do. Right? Because I go in as a fractional side by side to the CEO for 3 to 6 months. I get to find, even though I come in with, you know, a 9-step process that covers about 80% of what I do. The other 20% is what's living in the blind spot of the CEO.
Yeah.
And the only way to find that out is to work side by side with that person.
Agree.
The other thing is when I backfill myself, I now know exactly what it is, the position description I'm hiring for.
Yes.
And guess what? Now you have a professional headhunter with 30 years experience doing that job for you.
Nice.
No one else can say that. So I'm not here to pitch myself. What I'm here to is just give an example of that's something I would invite you to consider, right? Is what makes you unique over all the other SAP implementation partners? Because guess what? SAP doesn't really care about you. Okay, they're a big giant publicly traded company. They don't care about you. They just want to make sure stuff's getting done and they don't care who does it. They should be caring because all these, like to your point, these low cost overseas companies may not be doing such a good job. So
it's very true.
That's my soapbox about that.
Like, well, and one of the things that we pitch that makes us different is the fact that we as an organization have never had to worry about running into the SAP machine from an upgrade or implementation standpoint. There's a stat and there's a group. If you fall behind in your upgrades and you're falling, they come in and they start to deal with the SAP environment. We have never had to deal with that. Now, we've come close, but our people, we and our team, we know how to come in there and make sure that we bring our people in. Both. Now we do have our Indian offshore, we have our Brasilia offshore, because we follow the sun with our systems. But at the end of the day, it's about making sure that that customer is taken care of. And I know a lot of companies that literally have been run up the flagpole and nothing ever happens. Mm-hmm. Nothing ever happens to them. So we follow those processes and procedures and make sure that it's moving forward.
Right. So you've got about 175 employees, half of whom are here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, again, I know you're really passionate about hiring and everything to do with that. If you look at your own churn or lack thereof, what would you say is your percentage of churn? And is that coming more from overseas or more from the U.S. or is it equal?
Yeah, I'd say more of our churn comes in from overseas.
Okay.
And we have a very, very low churn rate compared to some of the companies that I talk to and some of the CEOs that I meet within our teams, simply because we first of all, we take care of them very well, no matter if they're at their home offices or in one of our offices. Two, we pay them above scale, and we don't abuse them. We don't ask them to work 18-hour days every day. We ask them, if you want to be in the office, great. If you don't want to be in the office, this is your responsibilities. We use a responsibility matrix. That responsibility, if you meet that responsibility matrix on a weekly basis, I don't care where you work, as long as you get that work done for the customer, for yourself, and for us.
Right.
And people don't understand that yet today. It's like, well,
I don't. What do you, like, people work like 40 hours. Who doesn't understand that?
Oh, it could be customers. It could be the staff members. It could be management. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at each individual along that chain. And it's funny. We don't tell them, you have to work 50 hours. You have to work 6 hours. Mm-hmm. No. I'm not billing that way either. Some companies only bill by the hour. So they have to be logged in and they have to be checked in and they have to be docked 40 hours, 50 hours, 60 hours a week. Well, we use a responsibility matrix. You're managing this customer.
Right.
Your timeline is from this time to this time. Mm-hmm. Anything that happens during that that process from the management and upkeep of that system. Mm-hmm. And because we do 24/7, your 8 hours, this group's 8 hours, group's 8 hours.
Right. That's the logical way to do it. You know, I have one of the companies that I do business with is in Israel, and they work pretty much just Israeli hours. And I'm like, yeah, that doesn't work for people when you're 9 hours ahead of me or 10 hours ahead of me, right? Yes. Where I can only reach you in the morning, first thing, like at 6 a.m.
And that's exactly why we don't have an Israeli office. We started out with that. We it's Ty Agassi, who actually used to be vice president at SAP, and his brother was the president of SAP America. And they bought a company, they brought them all in, and we thought, okay, this is going to be great. No, they did not get that concept either. So we ended up not moving forward with the organization and how we were structuring it over there. And so we moved it to Brazil. So you've got Brazil, you've got India, and you've got the United States, and it works out really nice with everything.
Right. Yeah, I love that. So is there anything other than, you know, when you say this, these, you know, overseas companies undercutting you, is that the one thing that if solved would make the biggest impact in your business growth, or is there something else?
No, the one other thing that happens right now is because we are in the largest SAP upgrade cycle in history.
Yeah.
One of the problems that we currently have is that SAP hasn't positioned this upgrade very well. Mm-hmm. And so you get a lot of these companies that are trying to figure out what's wise in house, and they're waiting to the very last minute to do the migrations that need to happen to go from ECC to S4 on HANA, which is a cloud-based solution. And so we're trying to help them understand what their business is now and what it's going to look like in the future. And there's so many, there's 486,000 companies running SAP, and not even 30% of them have done their migration.
The upgrade yet? Wow.
It is just, that is, so trying to get them to understand it's time to move. You're going to get caught in this wave of everybody trying to move at the last minute. And these migrations take a year or plus. Some of them, if you're lucky, can take a little less. But at the end of the day, they're going to have to get into the funnel in order to move, in order to get it done, because SAP only has so many people in their organization as well that can do that work. And we have to balance that with SAP.
Right.
So right now it's that piece of the puzzle. It's the education. It's trying to get them to move, getting them aligned, moving them into the process, and getting that process moving forward. And
what's the hesitance?
First of all, it's two things. Cost structure. People are saying, well, we've got this great ECC environment. It's doing everything we need to. I don't want to pay for another upgrade.
Right.
Okay. Then two is the people. It's a people thing. You get these individuals who are in these organizations and they do not want to relearn an SAP environment because it's a change. Mm-hmm. It's an absolute change. I had somebody a couple of weeks ago when we went on site and we were having conversations, and this woman literally said to me, I will not participate in this. I am 3 years from retirement. Not going to happen. I don't want to learn anything. I don't care about anything. By the time you get done with this, I'll be ready to go. Move. They can move me anywhere I want. I don't care. And I just thought, geez, wow, all the loyalty then. But I don't know the company well enough. I don't know their people. I don't know what they were doing with her. But she literally just said, I will not. And as part of that, there it's an interesting stat. If you look at the SAP ecosystem right now, it is a very old ecosystem.
Yeah.
If you look at the group, it's, if I remember correctly, the stat, and I put it in a blog post. I'll have to pull it out for you, Carol. It was 47% of all SAP consultants and employees around the United States are the age 45 and above.
Mm.
And then you look at, they're not bringing in young people. The offshore staff are bringing in young people. But the U.S. and even the university program, they're trying to get more people into the SAP university program. Mm. It's not happening at the scale that it is in other countries.
I mean, the only, you know, what that tells me is, as usual, this country is being reactive, not proactive.
Very much so.
And this, you know, this could be said about everything, right? It could be said about AI, the fact that AI is going to probably take over the world. That may sound a little drastic right now, but the point is that I think within about 5 years, AI will be able to build and deploy a bioweapon with no human interaction, all on its own.
I wouldn't doubt it.
And I've heard some experts talk about this.
Yeah.
And what is our government doing about it? Zip. Typical, right? And they won't do anything about it until it's too late. So this is not uncommon. You know, think about when they put a stoplight up. Oh, why did they put a stoplight there? Well, because 15 people got killed going through that intersection. So now they're putting it up reactively rather than proactively. So, I mean, this is how things run. And I'm not making any excuse for it, by the way, because I am a massive advocate for doing things proactively. It's kind of like, you know, when you talked about, you know, you didn't hire these people fast enough. Well, you were reacting, basically. You weren't being proactive.
Correct.
And you paid for that.
Yes.
However you paid, whether it was personal, whether it was professional, it was probably both.
Agree.
Right.
Agree. But it was both.
You know, so yeah. So, and so often with founders, I hear one of the complaints I hear out of them is, man, my family never sees me. They're at the bottom of my to-do list.
You know, you made that quote right there that some of the founders said. I've heard the same thing come out of the guys on Shark Tank, Kevin O'Leary. He's made the comment, and I heard it. He did a speech on stage, and he was talking about how this young entrepreneur has created a company, and it really started to take off. And he was actually in college yet, and he was engaged. And the fiance said, no, it's either that or it's me. And Kevin O'Leary said, well, I'm glad you canceled that wedding. And the young guy goes, well, I haven't made a decision. He goes, you've got a company that's making millions of dollars, and you're still in college. And you're actually contemplating of stopping it just to get married. And he kind of gave him right out of the riot act and stuff. And people in the audience were like, oh, Kevin, you're so mean and you're doing that. My thought process is I've been very fortunate. I've got a wife of 27 years who knew that I was an entrepreneur when we started, knew that I was into building companies and growing and traveling. My daughters, they were born into this. I take them places. We go places. We do stuff. You know what? There are times when I'm working and literally we had a system outage for a company because their data center was hacked. It had nothing to do with us, but their data center went completely dark and we're getting alerts because of it. And I was literally up for 2 days and lo and behold, my wife and children knew exactly what was going on. They were bringing me coffee. They were bringing me a little food. Right. They were doing this.
That's right.
They had everything okay? Do you need anything? Life, same way. Entrepreneurs need to realize that's going to be their life if they want
that's
this.
That's exactly right. It is so, so, so important. And, you know, listen, you and I can Monday morning quarterback this all day long, right? But I think the reality is that little bit tells me, well, maybe she was not the right woman for him, ultimately. Yeah. Or she needs to understand what it's like to be married to an entrepreneur.
Exactly.
And I think that often when one partner's an entrepreneur and the other one's not, however that looks, right? Whether it's the male, the female, whatever that looks like, that whoever that non-entrepreneur partner is better understand what they're getting themselves into. Because it's like anything. Whether it's in our personal life, whether it's the job that we do, we choose these things for who people are and who they're not, right? Yes. Or in this case, who the company is and who the company's not, right? or in this kid's case, you know, the partner was an entrepreneur. He wasn't going to be somebody who was going to be able to be home at her beck and call, right? And this is ultimately what causes the greatest conflict in relationships, is not being able to be with the who that person is not.
Yes.
Right? Meaning the things you just aren't crazy about, right? Can I live with this, or is it a deal breaker?
Agree.
Because 100%. Complaining and bitching and moaning about it ain't going to help.
Ain't going to help at all.
Not productive. What would you say your top priorities are? I know we talked about this a little bit in our first conversation, but what your top priorities are for growth, you know, over the next, you know, 6 to 12-ish months?
So for me, in the SAP ecosystem for AppRoyal, is AI, AI, AI. They're doing so much with AI. As a matter of fact, I leave Sunday for the North America partner meetings, and I looked at the schedule, and literally 75% of it, it's about AI.
Yeah.
So I'm focused at helping companies who are trying to migrate. I'm working on the licensing activities and the landscape development from an architectural standpoint. Mm-hmm. And then I've been building apps. I've been using Anti-Gravity. So I use Google Chrome, Gemini, Anti-Gravity, and Notebook LM. And I have just literally been going to town with building apps and things to help out individuals learn AI. I put together a 30-day SAP AI advent chart. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to really help people to understand that, you know, even though we're SAP and we're a major ERP, this is the direction you need to start learning. I don't care if you're gonna retire in 3 years, great, but you got to learn something and know something, because this is gonna fall on your plate within those 3 years. And so I'm constantly trying to build and help with new things around those activities for the next 12
Got
months.
It. Yeah. Chris, is there anything that we have not spoken about, I didn't ask you, that you think's important to talk about?
Ooh,
you know, insofar as, you know, how you've been evolving your workplace and your employees?
You know, I get involved because I'm a pretty hands-on guy, and I wear my emotions on my sleeve. Some bosses and CEOs and entrepreneurs, as they want to, whatever they want to call themselves, don't do that. Some do.
Yeah.
I like knowing when anniversaries are. I like knowing when their children are born. A friend of mine just had a baby, Ricky Smith. So I like to know those things and do things around them, and again, keep my emotions on my sleeve. But at the end of the day, also, I have to run a corporation and make sure that things are running smoothly in the direction that I and my advisory board feel are important along our chosen directives. So people need to realize that you don't have to be an ogre or be that mean guy. A little empathy goes a long way in the corporate, from the CEO's level down. And think about those things when you're working with staff members.
You know, and those things don't, I think what I'm hearing is those things are not mutually exclusive, right? They do not, they can, you know, you can be empathetic, you can be a vulnerable leader, and guess what? You still get to run a successful company.
Agree. 100% agree.
Well, Chris Carter, founder and CEO of AppRoyal, I've been looking forward to this conversation and appreciate your insights. Until next time.
Well, thanks, kiddo. It's been great, and I've been looking forward to it. It's great to talk with you again.
Thanks for listening to Evolving Your Workplace. Is there a topic you want to discuss? Let us know what you think in a review, and don't forget to click follow to stay up to date on upcoming episodes. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.